Women have far scarier nightmares than men, dreams so intense we can describe them in terrifying detail when we jolt awake. I'm Dr. Katherine Albrecht, and I'll tell you how sleep experts explain this in a moment.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights, say no to surveillance, and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
A giant monster is gaining on you. Its jaws are opening. You see its fangs, then bam, you're awake. Phew, not to worry. You just had one of those Friday the 13th nightmares again. Nightmares. Everybody gets them. But one study in England finds that women have twice as many terrifying dreams as men. Why the disparity? Scientists say it's because women have trouble switching off emotions when they go to bed. For them, dreaming is a subconscious way to prepare for bad stuff ahead. So guys, the next time your wife wakes up in a cold sweat, cut her some slack. A little extra TLC might be in order. I'm Dr. Katherine Albrecht. More news and information at KatherineAlbrecht.com. Finally, some nuclear news to cheer. The most powerful weapon in our atomic arsenal has been dismantled. I'm Dr. Katherine Albrecht, and I'll tell you about the last days of a frightening bomb they called the B-53 in a moment.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights, say no to surveillance, and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
Here's news that could make even a cold warrior smile. The aging B-53, the last of our nation's most powerful nuclear bombs, has been quietly taken apart at a plant near Amarillo, Texas. Dating way back to 1962, the Cold War and the Cuban Missile Crisis, the B-53 was the size of a minivan and weighed 10,000 pounds. This ancient nuke was 600 times more powerful than the one dropped on Hiroshima, which killed at least 140,000 people. Now the biggest nuke we've got is the B-83, a similar killer now pushing 30 years old. Will it take us half a century to retire that one? Let's hope not. I'm Dr. Katherine Albrecht. More news and information at KatherineAlbrecht.com.
Hi, you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, and it is the 20th of June, 2012. It's great to have your company today. My name's Hereward Fenton. Today we are going to be running through some key breaking news stories that are relevant to people in Australia and around the world. And in the second hour, John Bursell will be returning to the show to host an interview with the highly respected researcher and contributor to the Journal of 9/11 Studies, Frank Legg, and they're going to be talking about 9/11 and some of the issues and following from the previous week's discussions, getting into some of those contested issues about what happened, for instance, at the Pentagon on September 11. It's going to be another really interesting interview with two very knowledgeable people. I will, in the first hour, be guiding you through some of the news stories that are of particular interest to me. And I think the top of that list at the moment is Julian Assange. Now, it was reported in the news this morning that Julian Assange had sought political asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Now, a new story has just come out from The Telegraph, which says that Julian Assange has now breached his bail conditions because of this. It says that he has breached his bail conditions after spending the night at the Ecuadorian embassy in London, where he sought political asylum following his failed bid to avoid extradition to Sweden. Now, just reading here from the article at thetelegraph.co.uk, the 40-year-old Australian who is due to be extradited in the next couple of weeks could now be rearrested. Mr. Assange entered the embassy in Knightsbridge and requested asylum under the United Nations Human Rights Declaration. He stayed overnight while his application was being processed, but in doing so has breached one of his bail conditions and is now subject to arrest under the Bail Act. A Metropolitan Police spokesperson said, one of the conditions was that he was supposed to be at a named bail address between 10 p.m. and 8 a.m. and it was 10:20 p.m. that we were notified that he had breached that particular condition. So in seeking political asylum, he has in effect triggered a bail breach, which could in fact lead him to be immediately arrested. And then I presume his chances of avoiding extradition would be about nil. The whole situation here is one of a complete travesty of the normal due process that we expect from anyone who has been actually charged with a crime. But of course, Julian Assange has not even been charged with a crime, and that's what makes this situation completely outside of the norms of any kind of democratic society. He is merely charged with allegations. There are merely allegations against him in Sweden. And because of the peculiarities of European law, with changes to the extradition treaties that were written into law in the year 2001, countries can now extradite people without even charges being levied. And of course, he can't answer the charges because, well, there aren't charges, there are only allegations. It really actually defies the whole concept of what law and due process is all about. It's almost a kind of it's something you expect from a novel, like it, but it's more like a novel, like a Kafka novel, than an Orwell novel. It's really more like The Trial, you know, that famous Kafka novel of a man who is charged, but he's never told what he's been charged with, and he can never find out, and he goes through this maze of bureaucracies trying to find out what he's actually been charged with, and he has all these people threatening him the whole time, and it's just an incredible sort of journey into the nightmare world of tyranny and bloated bureaucracies. And that was written about 100 years ago, but the world we live in today seems to really have borne fruit. I mean, with the sort of predictions and prognostications of people like Kafka and Orwell and Huxley, they really did preempt the future. So, I mean, that it's fascinating, but on the other hand, it's something that really just is chilling and it must inspire us to actually take action. I'm taking action by doing this show, but those who are listening, there's a variety of things that you can do. Of course, you know, there will be protests in support of Julian Assange, but, you know, you need to take this to your local political representatives, and you need to do everything you can to alert people to the fact that this is a complete breach of the normal conditions of law and order. So let me just move on now with a few more stories here relevant to Australia. I just want to cover a couple of nanny state stories, which we always like to cover on this show, and we just sort of like to keep tabs on all the little nanny state measures, all the little, you know, tangles of thread that are basically wrapping us up and trussing us up in a coddled kind of state where we can't do anything that might be bad for us. Well, the latest one of those is wine warnings. Now, it turns out that the federal government is moving to bring in compulsory warnings on bottles of wine, warning that pregnant women are at risk. And it's actually got a picture here in the article, and this was from the Australian. Now, actually, I'm looking at the newspaper, the online version of that right now, and it doesn't actually have the picture, but I do have the newspaper, and I seem to have mislaid it. Okay, well, I'll just read to you from the article. Australia's health ministers will make cigarette-style health warnings mandatory on bottles and cans of wine, beer and spirits, unless the alcohol industry brings in its own labelling system within 18 months. Winemakers and brewers are already using a pictogram of a pregnant woman, with a warning based on National Health and Medical Research Council guidelines that it is safest not to drink while pregnant. But the Foundation for Alcohol Research is pushing for stronger mandatory messages, and the little label that I've seen, and it's not a little label, it's quite a major, you know, significant label. It's going to say drinking alcohol can harm your unborn baby. Now, look, I agree that drinking alcohol is a risk, and of course, drinking too much alcohol can harm your unborn baby. But what I find particularly offensive about this type of measure, you know, of course, they're going to put it on all these bottles, and all these bottles of wine are going to have this ugly message on it. Now, what about the vaccines that we know are harming babies all the time, every year? Thousands, hundreds of thousands of women every year are being prompted to take vaccines by their doctors, and we know that that can harm a baby. There is absolutely nothing done to prevent the medical damaging of people and children, while at the same time people's choices are being curtailed by this nanny state sort of tendency. And it's just an incredible sort of travesty of logic. And do we really need to be told all the time, you know, what can hurt us and what can't? So that's one nanny state measure. Now, another one that's gaining ground is the new marine park bans. Recreational and commercial fishing lobby groups have slammed a federal government plan to establish marine parks along the state's coastline where fishing will be banned. Environment Minister Tony Burke has released the final plan for 44 marine parks, including the Coral Sea and the southwest coast of Western Australia. The new reserves will cover 3.1 million square kilometres, or a third of Australian waters. In Western Australia, fishing will be banned in more than 20 areas, which will also be off limits for oil and gas drilling. The Gillard government has also moved to ban oil and gas exploration off the Margaret River coastline. Okay, now some of these things, you know, don't sound too bad, you know. And of course, the way this was phrased in Parliament, I actually overheard this. And the reason why I'm bringing you the story is I actually heard them talking about it in Parliament. And I heard this really vigorous debate. And I thought, oh, well, it's just another one of those sham debates. But then I actually started listening to it. And it was quite late at night. It was about 2 or 3 days ago. It was at about 11 p.m. And I actually started listening. And, you know, well, the opposition was obviously against it. But I started thinking, well, yeah, I mean, what is really going on here? They're actually banning recreational fishing in a huge swathe of area around Australia. And again, this is, it's nanny state, but it's also corporatization. It's also like the corporate government partnerships will run everything. You won't be able to catch fish. You won't be able to you know, do the things that you like to do, except in limited areas where we make it possible for you. And of course, we've seen all these other moves to limit what people can do with growing their own food and herbs. And there's a whole lot of other laws that were passed in Australia just in the last year or so that actually limit the things people can grow. And again, it's just an invasion of people's personal space. And for no reason other than it just seems to be the pure trend towards a total cloying totalitarian grip to just basically tell people what they can and can't do. So I'll leave those two articles up there for you to have a look at. Now, my next story before we head to break, which is coming up shortly, Alan Jones. Now, Alan Jones, radio host of 2GB, is well known for his climate change skepticism, and many people think of him as somewhat of a right-wing redneck, and I actually would agree with that. And of course, for many years I was never a great fan of Alan Jones because he was quite pro-war and he seemed to actually embrace a lot of the stereotypical right-wing positions. And it's only in recent years that he's emerged as a bit of a hero of the climate change movement, or the anti-climate carbon tax movement. And I've actually started listening to a lot more of his broadcasts, and I actually find him, you know, very compelling. You know, and I'm not saying anything about his views on other subjects, and I probably would disagree with him vehemently on a lot of other subjects. But it turns out that because of his stance on climate change, Alan Jones is now in the sights of ACMA, which is a regulatory organisation here in Australia. Now, this is an article which is from an alternative news source, which appears to be itself very compromised, and I really don't trust what they're saying in here in terms of the factual content. But I'll just quickly read to you. Alan Jones faces closer supervision of his 2GB radio show after the media watchdog found the station failed to try hard enough to ensure his statements on climate change were accurate. However, he has been cleared over comments that Julia Gillard should be put in a chaff bag and thrown out to sea, which is, of course, something he did say and got hugely criticised for it, and they made out it was the most horrendous thing anyone ever said. Well, he's actually been cleared of that. However, 2GB has been chastised by ACMA because they were unable to demonstrate that reasonable steps had been taken to ensure the accuracy of Jones's statement that human beings produce 0.001% of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Now, it says here that the majority of scientists put that figure closer to 30%. I think that's completely false. I think 30% is a ridiculous figure. Now, we'll get back into that after the break, and John Bursell will be joining us. Please stay with us. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm Herewood Fenton.
Is a serial hypocrite who lobbied for Freddie Mac before the housing crisis and for the individual mandate before Obamacare. Another, a counterfeit conservative who opposes right to work, massively increased spending, and funded Planned Parenthood. Finally, a flip-flopper who's been on all sides, supported TARP bailouts, and provided the blueprint for Obamacare. Three men. One vision, more big government, more mandates, less freedom. One man stands apart, ready to deliver real change, voting against every tax increase and every unbalanced budget every time. A real plan to cut $1 trillion year one and to balance the budget in three. Pro-life, pro-right to work, guided by faith and principle. Ron Paul, the one who will restore America now.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Are you being harassed by debt collectors with phone calls, letters, or even lawsuits? Stop debt collectors now with the Michael Maris Proven Method. Michael Maris has won 6 cases in federal court against debt collectors, and now you can win too. You'll get step-by-step instructions in plain English on how to win in court using federal civil rights statutes, what to do when contacted by phone, mail, or court summons, how to answer letters and phone calls, how to get debt collectors out of your credit report, how to turn the financial tables on them and make them pay you to go away. The Michael Maris Proven Method is the solution for how to stop debt collectors. Personal consultation is available as well. For more information, please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the blue Michael Maris banner or email michaelmaris@yahoo.com. That's ruleoflawradio.com or email michaelmiras@yahoo.com to learn how to stop debt collectors now.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Glad you could join us today. We've been going through some Australian news. We led there with the story about Julian Assange. And this whole situation is just so poignant. And it really is symbolic of the crisis of modern Western democratic civilization, I believe. And I have on the line now John Bursell, who will also be continuing through in the second hour to interview Frank Legg. I will not be available, so John will be taking over from me in the second hour. John, welcome back.
G'day, Harold. How are you today?
Look, I'm in good form. I've been very busy lately, but it's sort of my brain is in that kind of really hyped up state that keeps me actually engaged. So it's good in some ways. It's just a bit exhausting. But I'm glad that I'm alive. I'm glad that I'm sort of haven't given up on life. Because a lot of people just get into a rut. And they get into a certain point in their life and they just think, okay, that's it. That's me. I feel like I've got a big life ahead of me. Anyway, that's
for sure. I mean, 40 is a new 30, isn't it? So, there's plenty of life left. I mean, I've been going through a little bit of tough times here with this shoulder reconstruction. My goodness, a bit of constant pain does a lot to
I should just tell
refrain.
That for the audience.
That's for sure.
That,
but I've been struggling a little bit with that, but I've been keeping my mind busy and I find that helps a lot.
Yeah, just for the audience, the reason why you're able to host some shows at the moment is because you're actually off work from this massive operation that you had, and you're actually going to be recovering from that for a few months. Is that right?
Yeah, total of 6 months in all, but nearly 2 months in a sling without being able to move my arm. Thank God I can use my hand, but basically just had to have the cartilage inside the shoulder reattached and fully repaired. It was smashed up in a bad motorcycle accident. Luckily, it was in Australia where we've got workers' compensation and we're covered to and from work, so. Yeah, it's all being paid for, but I've just got to bear the pain while it repairs.
Yeah,
so rather than a slow process, a bit of bone grinding as well, which takes a while to heal. So, yeah, I'll be in pain for many months to come.
Good opportunity to get re-engaged with things that are actually going wrong with the world.
Exactly. Wasn't it great that Damon called me an agent just the other week, and it sort of got me all fired up just as I came out of, just as I was going into hospital.
Well, yeah, that may be destiny,
Then I came out and it sort of reinvigorated me to get back involved and start looking at a few things that were going on. And I've got involved with another radio program as well now because I'm off. So it's good. It's keeping me busy.
Yeah, mate. I'm sure it was all pre-planned that way.
Now, of course.
Now, John, what's your take on the Julian Assange situation? And we haven't really talked about it much, but I mean, what do you think's really going on here? I mean, I just find it just totally perplexing and confusing more than anything else.
Well, I agree. I mean, people like Webster Tarpley, who makes all sorts of crazy accusations about people, but it was also very interesting, says that he's a complete asset.
Well, yes.
That's one view. Then we've got the, I think that's also, Alex Jones sort of view as well. But my view really is just sort of what we're seeing and what you're seeing about the police state, the measures they're going to silence the fellow, and this situation, where he's uncharged, and he's going to be extradited. Now, I watched the Four Corners episode. We have a Four Corners program here in Australia and probably a lot of other countries in the world have a similar thing, one of the few investigative journalism shows on television in Australia now. It's an hour program without any ad breaks, and it did an in-depth interview and look into the situation with Private Manning.
Bradley, yeah, right.
And also, people that had talked to Manning, they couldn't interview Manning, they weren't allowed to, but also they interviewed Assange. They talked about the total situation, how they believe that the US is trying to get Manning to indict or to bring information out that will say that Assange assisted him with espionage. And that's the end game for the US, is to get him to Sweden, then present this information that comes out through their interrogation and torture of Bradley Manning. He's been held in solitary confinement, which I consider torture. He was made to present naked on a regular basis there for a few weeks on end. All sorts of little things they've done to him, flashing lights, the usual thing. They do lots of things in military prisons that could be considered torturous. I think solitary confinement's pretty torturous. So they're trying to break him. They're trying to get some information out of him to set up Assange for a espionage claim.
But one thing I really still don't understand is why does the Americans need to get him to Sweden? Because if they wanted to extradite him, they could extradite him from the UK straight to America. Why is Sweden a stepping stone? I just don't understand it.
I thought it's got something to do with the treaty arrangements. I just thought that was the case. It was the treaty arrangements that he had to go to Sweden to be somewhere that he could be extradited from by the US, that the British didn't have that arrangement because the British still see their citizens as important as American citizens, and their treaty system is different, and their law, a system of law, is different as well. Obviously, you know, being based on law, Admiralty law, or whatever it is that, you know, the basis of the empire, you know, the British Empire. I think the law is different. I don't know much about it, but that's what I thought.
Okay.
I'd have to look into it. I never really thought about that. I thought that must be the reason they're trying to get him to Sweden. What they presented in the Four Corners episode.
I have read, you know, analysis of it, which said that actually it didn't really make much difference because the same extradition could be done from the UK. He might not have as much support in Sweden. He's got more of a support network in the UK, but then those lawyers and barristers that he has in the UK could surely support him in Sweden as well. But one of the things that WikiLeaks has been saying is that there is a sealed indictment against him. So this is actually like a secret charges against him, which have already been laid but have been done in secret. I mean, the whole thing, it's just reeks of some kind of hideous to totalitarianism. I mean, that's just the feeling I get from it. And I just wonder about, you know, what his state of mind must be. And of course, now he's taken refuge in the Ecuadorian embassy. I mean, this seems like a genuinely last ditch, desperate measure on his behalf. Because
when he did the interview on RT with their ambassador, or was it their prime minister or something, like, you know, how he's been doing the interviews on RT. RT's been trying to help him by building his credibility, I suppose, in a whole lot of networks by that show they've let him have, a half-hour show he does every week. He was interviewing the prime minister. I watched the episode, but it was a few months back. I can't remember exactly what it was about, but I remember during the interview he sort of said that, you know, he'd be prepared to help Assange out. There was something going on, and then I believe there was talks after that, and that led to an offer being made of asylum possibility possibility.
He interviewed the president of Ecuador on RT, of course. I watched some of that as well. And
it was the president, yeah, okay. I can't remember whether it was the ambassador or the president. But, yeah, there was an interview and he got to talk to him, and there might have been an offer made then.
Right. But, of course, there's no indication as to whether it's been accepted. And, of course, if Ecuador does this, this will put them right in the sights of the US as well. I mean, this will really cause massive repercussions if Ecuador says we're going to give asylum to Assange. But then it may be the only option, and it may be his best option. Because really, if he does go to Sweden, he's actually caving into a total miscarriage of justice. Because, I mean, really, I mean, can I just get your take on this whole business of these allegations against him? I mean, you know, how they keep calling it rape, and yet there was never any. I'm not even talking about proof here. I'm actually just talking about there was no accusation of rape, but the newspapers picked it up as the word rape, which seems to be a mistranslation, because what happened to Assange was consensual. Everything that happened was consensual. And yet, the word rape has continued to be used and is still being used now. I mean, don't you find that incredible?
Well, it should really be called impregnate because, I mean, the technical difference is it's something to do with the situation with women's rights there is very, very strong. Good for them, good for the women that have those rights. But those rights include protection from impregnation. And I believe he didn't protect himself, so that was what it was all about.
And the woman retrospectively said, well, I wasn't happy about that. But, of course, she wasn't beating him away at the time, and, you know, they had breakfast afterwards.
It's crazy. Crazy stuff.
It's a crazy time. OK, we're going to break. Please stay with us. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back.
A noble lie, Oklahoma City, 1995, will change forever the way you look at the true nature of terrorism.
Based on the damage pattern to the building, what the government says is impossible.
The grand jury did not want to hear anything I had to say.
The decision was made not to pursue any more of those individuals.
Some of these columns were ripped up, shredded, tossed around.
The people that did the things they did knew doggone well what they were doing.
Expose the cover-up now at anoblelie.com.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
It is so enlightening to listen to 90.1 FM, but finding things on the internet isn't so easy, and neither is finding like-minded people to share it with.
Oh, well, I guess you haven't heard of Brave New Books then.
Brave New Books?
Yes, Brave New Books has all the books and DVDs you're looking for by authors like Alex Jones, Ron Paul, and G. Edward Griffin. They even stock Interfood, Berkey products, and Calbin soaps.
There's no way a place like that exists.
Go check it out for yourself. It's downtown at 1904 Guadalupe Street, just south of UT.
By UT, there's never anywhere to park down there.
Actually, they now offer a free hour of parking for paying customers at the 500 MLK parking facility, just behind the bookstore.
It does exist. But when are they open?
Monday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. and 1 to 6 p.m. on Sundays. So give them a call at 512-480-2503 or check out their events page at bravenewbookstore.com.
Live Free Speech Radio, LogosRadioNetwork.com.
Hi, welcome back. Well, you know, when you're covering the news today and you're in this sort of alternative space that we're in, you know, there's very little you can add to it. I mean, we can't sort of get inside scoops, but we can talk about things that are being ignored that are actually in the public domain that are quite incredible. But often, you know, we find that all we can do is just sort of sit back and just, you know, exclaim about how absurd it is. And yet, as pointless as that may seem, I think it is necessary. It is necessary to have a vehicle in the media that is actually doing that, that is reflecting on that which is already obvious, because no one else is. It's this emperor's new clothes syndrome. Now, I'd like to actually move on with some more propaganda pieces tonight that I'm trying to expose, and I want to actually play you a clip that was aired on ABC television last week, and this features the TV host Tony Jones interviewing a lady from Amnesty International. And Amnesty International has a history of collaborating in US propaganda, and this goes right back to the first Iraq War in 1991, when they collaborated in the claim that babies were being pulled out of incubators by the Kuwaitis by the Iraqis who had invaded Kuwait and had occupied it. And they said that the Iraqis were pulling babies out of incubators in the hospitals. Now, it appears that Amnesty International is collaborating in the propaganda theme that the Syrian government is engaging in horrendous massacres of people, you know, mass killings. But the news sources that are the most credible, the ones that are actually on the ground, RT reporters on the ground in Syria have shown us that there is no clear proof of who committed those massacres. And there is strong evidence that the people who did it were actually rebel sympathizers, because the people who were killed were government supporters. And yet we're expected to believe that these government supporters were killed by government troops. The whole thing does not add up, but that side of it was completely suppressed in our media. But it is actually uncontentious. It's just factual information that is out there in the public domain. And it's bad enough that our media has been ignoring that. But in addition to that, our media has really been ramping up and hyping up the completely hollow claims about the bloodthirsty, ruthless nature of the Assad regime. And this interview here is one of the most egregious examples of that I think I've ever heard. And it's the interview is being run by Tony Jones, who is a veteran of ABC propaganda, and his host is a lady from Amnesty International. So let's just kick it off, and I might interrupt it here to make a few comments as we go.
Well, to discuss the situation in Syria, we're joined now in the studio by Whitney Brown, the Senior Director of International Law and Policy at Amnesty International. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Now, your field investigator, I gather there's only one of them, is that right?
Correct.
Was she able to make any estimate of the scale of the summary executions in these towns and villages?
No, she wasn't. We collected numbers from the people in the towns, but we did not have necessarily independent corroboration, because the burials happened very rapidly, and in summer just disappeared. A lot of times the young men were taken out, shot, and burned, and their bodies were found later, so you don't know how many bodies were never found.
And the allegation that many of the people detained were tortured, many of them tortured to death, is that come from eyewitness accounts or the relatives of people who just never returned?
Yes, the relatives of people who then saw the bodies when they were released to them for burial, and so that we were able to document the nature of the torture there, as well as some of the people who survived and were released.
Now, Amnesty, in its report, states unequivocally that the investigator found disturbing new evidence of grave abuses by the Syrian army, which amount to crimes against humanity and war crimes. Now, does this evidence point to a more systematic and murderous campaign than the world has currently heard about?
It absolutely reinforces what we've heard before, but we are able to now, based on our investigation, establish that there's a pattern. They go and they surround the villages on three sides, they shell. Then they walk in with everything totally under control, and they systematically pull out the men, young men, and older men, too. We also documented the murders of men in their 80s, 70s, 60s. There's a touching case of a 54-year-old policeman who had actually quit his job because he had a nervous breakdown, being found shot as he huddled under his blanket in a bed in a house he never left. Then the burning of the bodies and the burning often of the houses, as well as the destruction of the property. Additionally, in some cases, we saw the attacks on women and children. And then the other thing that we saw that makes it so clear that this is part of a pattern and a practice was the targeting of all medical clinics. So the houses are being destroyed, but they're absolutely picking out medical clinics, doctors, any place that somebody might go for help.
Okay, I'll just pause it there. So now, she's telling a story there. You know, a story is being created, a narrative. And of course, everything she said about what is actually happening, that people have been killed, people have been tortured, medical clinics have been targeted, I'm sure this is all correct. But there is just one part of it, one small but absolutely central part of it that is not correct, which is where she's pointing the finger. But even so, she's doing it in a very vague way. And she's not even sort of identifying any individuals. She's just sort of talking about the regime, which of course makes it very easy to backtrack or to have plausible deniability. What do you make of this, John? I mean, what's your feeling about Amnesty International in the light of all this?
As you know, I'm a member of Amnesty International. I've been reconsidering that in recent weeks. Obviously, you know, back in the first Iraq War, you know, they made the argument that they were fooled by, you know, a very well-organized media campaign that was paid for $10 million that came from Kuwait. to pay for a media campaign in America to get everybody behind the war, and that was the incubator story, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And Amnesty International made the claim that they were fooled, and, you know, they later did an investigation and found that, you know, that that was all untrue. Okay, bit too late, obviously. Now, since then, there's been quite a lot of information coming out that they're being controlled, like most things. And I'm just at a stage of life now, I just can't believe in anything anymore. Any organisation that's got any sort of power is seems to be corrupted if it's got anything to do with the American war agenda. So it's very, very difficult to be able to be a charitable person and actually support a charity, like, as bad as that is. You know, that's something I'm considering. I'm probably going to drop my Amnesty International annual. You know, I give them quite a few hundred dollars a year, hoping that they'll go and do good work. But if they're becoming part of the American war propaganda machine, which the evidence is starting to mount, you know, I'm really not interested. You know, I get most of my views and news from RT as far as, you know, video.
Yeah,
and
as far as
I know, there's no video documentary evidence that the government's doing any of these things. The evidence is very, very thin. So these claims, you know, that we're hearing to Tony Jones, the man that brought us the Northern Territory intervention, which has destroyed Aboriginal communities in Australia. And, you know, this guy's been a proven company liar on the behalf of the Australian government. We know that about Tony Jones. So, yeah, I'm very sceptical of the whole thing, Harold, but I don't know enough about it to have a true opinion. The only people that do are the people that have been there, and I've read some reports from people that are there, and they're a completely different story, very similar story that we've heard about Libya. The story that we've heard that comes right from the words of, you know, the chief of staff there in the Europe, Wesley Clark, General Wesley Clark, when he came back to the Pentagon after 9/11, which they had all these countries in their sights from day one. And obviously Russia's sending troops now to protect its base there in Syria. It's only outside of a Russia base. And it's a giant escalation, and it could lead to a war with Iran and a third world war. So it's all very, very worrying. And yeah. You know, I take the Russian position. I take the Chinese position. It's a sovereign nation with a sovereign government. Get out. And the weapons that are coming in via the CIA and all these other nefarious sources should be stopped. And that's what the UN should be doing. The UN shouldn't be in there talking up another war.
Well, you know, John, I believe that that these propagandists need to be challenged. And I feel for myself that I need to lift my game, and I need to take what I'm doing to another level, because I can sit here on the radio and talk about this till I'm blue in the face. But that's fine. I think it's important that we do that. But the people who are telling the lies seem to be completely smug and completely unaffected by what they're doing. Now, I'm planning to move into a more you know, assertive kind of mode. I'm actually going to get a better camera, and I'm actually planning to get out there and start doing some guerrilla journalism to actually just at least confront some of these people in public spaces when they're out there about things that appear to be complete deceptions or just complete inaccuracies in what they've said. So that's what I'm moving towards. And I really hope that I can get interest in our listeners to do this type of thing as well, because I believe we've actually got to engage more. Now, we've got one more segment coming up, and we're going to get a little bit into the Fringe
9/11. Yeah, can we talk about the Vancouver hearings?
We are indeed. We're going to get into the Vancouver hearings. Stay right with us. We'll be back with Truth News Radio Australia.
The Oklahoma City bombing. Top 10 reasons to question the official story. Reason number 2, why was the ATF AWOL? Paramedic Tiffany Bible, who was on the scene within 5 minutes, has stated in an affidavit that agents of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco and Firearms told her that they were not in their office that morning. EMT Catherine Mallett also overheard one agent say to another, quote, is that why we got the page to not come in today, end quote. Bruce Shaw, as interviewed on KFOR-TV, was also told by ATF agents that they had been paged to not come into work. The ATF initially denied these claims and now variously claim that one of their agents was in a free-falling elevator, which has been disproven, or that they had been in an all-night stakeout, or that they had been at a golf tournament. As they try to sort out their lives, all we want to know is, did the ATF receive a warning? And if so, why did they not pass it on to others in the Mirabel? For more information, go to OKCBombingTruth.com.
Are you the plaintiff or defendant in a lawsuit? Win your case without an attorney with JurisDictionary, the affordable, easy-to-understand 4-CD course that will show you how in 24 hours, step by step. If you have a lawyer, know what your lawyer should be doing. If you don't have a lawyer, know what you should do for yourself. Thousands have won with our step-by-step course, and now you can too. JurisDictionary was created by a licensed attorney with 22 years of case-winning experience. Even if you're not in a lawsuit, you can learn what everyone should understand about the principles and practices that control our American courts. You'll receive our audio classroom, video seminar, tutorials, forms for civil cases, pro se tactics, and much more. Please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the banner or call toll-free 866-LAW-EASY.
Hi, welcome back. You're with the Truth Channel. My name's Herewood Fenton. Truth News Radio Australia comes from Sydney, Australia. You can find our website at truthnews.com.au, and you can find our Facebook page if you go to the website, and you can join some discussions there. If you're from Australia, you may find it highly worthwhile. We get a lot of news coming through that's quite relevant, and indeed, wherever you may be, you may find it highly worthwhile. Now, in the time we've got left in this hour, I want to turn once again to the vexed questions of 9/11 and the questions within the questions about the movements for truth for 9/11. There is a conference that took place just last weekend in Canada, which are known as the Vancouver hearings. And this is actually a follow-up of another conference that was held, I believe, last year that were called the Toronto hearings, which were organized by some of the leaders of the 9/11 truth movement and scientists who've written peer-reviewed papers and people I consider to be quite worthy and excellent individuals. Now, the Vancouver hearings appears to be some kind of pale shadow of that. And it appears to be a vehicle for all those who feel shunned by that other group, which has sort of come to be seen as the mainstream of 9/11 truth. And this is kind of the fringe or alternative 9/11 truth. And I believe that the moniker of the conference was extending the boundaries of 9/11 truth. So, John, I'll get you to just give your take on that, extending the boundaries of 9/11 truth. What do you make of that?
Well, I talked about it last week at length, and we went through the reasoning behind it. Now, there's two completely different schools of thought here. Okay, the 10 years after 9/11, the Toronto hearings and the consensus panel. I suggest everybody go 9/11 consensus panel, have a look there on the web at the website there that was set up by David Ray Griffin, with and look at who the 20 panel members are and check them out. There's one there that I would contest, which is Dwayne Dietz, who I think from his showing at the Vancouver hearings has shown exactly what I thought from him right from the beginning, that he's not very careful with what he says and what he does. And I don't think he's the sort of guy that we need as a scholar in the movement. But obviously it was a reaction to the Toronto hearings, which was a narrowing of the evidence to the best evidence. There was some things there that are a little bit controversial. Toronto, I actually paid to go for two tickets, but didn't go at all. But
right.
I did support the Vancouver hearings in a way. I paid for the live stream, but then it didn't work. So I got my money back, which worked out all right. I still got to see quite a few hours up to get the general idea of what was happening. It was a bit of a laugh. There's quite a lot of arguing, bickering. People ran over time. People didn't show up. There was polarized positions. You know, they made all the arguments that we've, or they say that we're censoring. You know, the argument that Israel definitely 100% did 9/11 was made strongly numerous times during the conference. The argument that absolutely there's no chance that a plane hit the Pentagon was made numerous times during the conference. That was one of the sessions, which was,
now, can I just interject briefly? Now, this question about a plane hitting the Pentagon, I know that this actually divides a lot of people in the movement, and a lot of the people, some of them quite highly qualified as well, don't agree with your position, John, on the Pentagon.
That's fine. That's why we've got the consensus panel, and the consensus panel have viewed the Pentagon. They've come up with quite a few points of consensus around the Pentagon.
Right.
The scientific view, with the actual scientists that have looked at the evidence properly, not just come up with a view from one photo they saw with a clear grassy lawn, or from their view that was cemented in their head from in plain sight back in 2005. The ones that are actually looking at the evidence, they have two points of view. We don't know what happened, or a plane hit the Pentagon. They're the two points of view the scientists hold. Now, all these people, like, you know, say even like Webster Tarpley says that he believes a missile was launched out of a submarine somewhere in the ocean. You know, just comes up with a theory by himself. Other people come up with other theories that doesn't meet the evidence. The evidence has changed over the years. The DFDR has been properly cracked, not the podge job that the pilots for 9/11 Truth did. The last few seconds were crashed by experts that figured out how to do it and figured out that the DFDR data did follow exactly what the witness testimony found. We had the CIT argument, author of the Sitco, didn't match the damage pattern. And after a very good review of witness testimony, on balance, we find that that doesn't hold up either. I'm not saying it's not possible. But, you know, there's all these possibilities. But what we're trying to do on the, you know, as we get to the 10th anniversary of 9/11 and beyond, we're trying to figure out what we know and what we don't know. The biggest problem with the 9/11 Truth Movement is we can't get the data. We can't get the data we need to know what happens. So you have to let go of things you can't get the data for, and you decide on your consensus points, and then you try to encourage the public to look into the events. This conference was designed to polarize, okay? It was Israel did 9/11. Tarpley argued the opposite, and there was a big argument at the end of the hearings. We had the fellow that was meant to be hearing the hearings is Alfred Weber, or spelt Webray, who came out this year with a statement that lost him his small job at theexaminer.com, where he said that Obama went to Mars for 20 years as some space program. You know,
yeah.
This is the sort of guy that's leading this conference.
That's really
Jim Pence is putting forward the video fakery hologram theory at the towers. You know, we've got all the wacky theories there all put forward again that have all been debunked.
And, of course, one of the co-organisers of this conference is Joshua Blakeney, who, incidentally, is coming on this show next week. And I have studied up a little bit about him now, and largely as a result of some of your comments, John, I had thought he was just more or less a straightforward journalist, and I'd seen him on Press TV, and I'd seen him pop up. He sends out emails, and I was on his email list, but I didn't realise he was actually such a strong endorser of all the most extreme fringe elements. And I saw an interview that he did with a Canadian show in which he really pushes the most extreme improbable theories about 9/11. I mean, he seems to be a convinced no-planer.
He's got he got a Queen Elizabeth scholarship for his studies into the origins of the war on terror, you know, which he's doing in university at the moment. And it just so happens the two organisers, Fetzer and Blakeney, both are working for Press TV as correspondents. Press TV is Iran. Iran's America's enemy. So we've got two guys, like, you know, Andy, the Iran war, I organised a protest.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm not for war with Iran. I side with Iran. But it's just funny that they're both working for Press TV, okay, which is basically America's enemy at the moment. Okay, they're putting forward the wackiest theories. They're saying Israel did it categorically, absolutely Israel did it. There's no doubt about it, without evidence. They've got that's the whole thing. The 9/11 Truth Movement said Israel, has never said Israel didn't do 9/11. We just said, there's evidence that they knew about it. There's evidence that they could have been involved in aspects of it. There's evidence that their companies, Israeli-based companies, just like American-based war industry companies, were involved. Absolutely. Mm. But we don't know who did it, right? So they went about trying to say who they know who did it. They know how it happens. It's all about their egos. It was an ego fest.
Okay, can we just talk about
the bloody 9/11 police? Right. But I tell you, the guys at this conference, all ego.
Can we just talk about Jim Fetzer for a minute? Because, okay, a professor of many, many years standing, highly esteemed in his...
What a bio.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, appears to be a genuine seeker of truth. He looks very earnest. He appears to be passionate. And yet, you know, contrary to you, John, where you say, well, let's advance the most solid information. Let's only move with what we know because we want to be sure we're right so that we can gain credibility. Fetzer takes the line that, no, we need to be more controversial because by being more controversial, we will excite people's attention. I've actually read that somewhere that he actually stated that.
So they also think that blaming Israel is going to get the American public behind them as well in some sort of revolution against the Israeli-controlled Congress. Now, it is a fact. Now, this is the problem, that Tarpley had this complete opposite view that Israel had no involvement and has no power over the American government.
Right.
We know for a fact they have a lot of power over the American government on issues to do with Israel, in my view, not issues to deal with everything. But Blakeney and others there, Zaborsky didn't show up. He was the major draw card, the ex-military scholar. But anyway, so we had this situation. The only rational voice there is Barrett. And Barrett's supported every wacky theory too, in a way he's let people talk about it. They're all no plane at the Pentagon men, and they all refuse to accept that there could be another story at the Pentagon. So, you know, it was just a circus, as I thought it would be.
So John, you are you believe a plane actually hit the Pentagon? Is that your position?
I do now. As strange as that sounds, and that's from me having a complete opposite view back in 2006 when I started off in the movement. Because over the years, the evidence has built up to that's. I don't say I know that for a fact.
Yes,
we don't know anything about the crashes on 9/11. Everybody can agree on that because there was no proper investigations. There was no air crash investigations. They were FBI investigations, and they're all off the record. So we don't know what happened on 9/11 really much at all, do we? And that's the point. But what does the evidence show? The evidence shows that most likely to me based on the evidence, and this is what the scientists are now coming to a consensus on, is that a large passenger aircraft hit the Pentagon.
So it might as well have been Flight 77 because it was a large passenger aircraft. So
that's it. Then my position has become over the years that if we can't prove otherwise, accept the official story, at least accept that, you know, that's the working hypothesis if we can't prove otherwise, and then work on the bits that we can prove that shows that 9/11 was a complete fabrication. Otherwise, we show ourselves to be unreasonable and we show ourselves to be zealots and cults and cult-like figures. And, like the fact that they had this Weber fellow, being the judge that thinks that Obama went to Mars for 20 years.
Yeah,
like,
that really...
What are they on? You know, what could be more discrediting than the movement? Now, I don't think anyone turned up anyway, so it didn't really matter. And they all got it out of their system, so good on them. CIT didn't turn up, and Judy Wood didn't turn up because they can't even get on with Fetzer.
But so, of course, with someone like Josh Blakeney organising that and also being a lead reporter for Press TV in Canada, along with Jim Fetzer, I mean, this is a very serious situation. I mean, it's not... It may be trivial in one sense, but... This is not, these are not friends of Iran. They are not helping Iran in what they're doing. And I wonder if...
I don't think so either. And the fact that Fetzer has called people that say the plane hit the Pentagon a fanatical cult.
John, we're going to have to wind up. Sorry, we are ending the hour. You will be taking over in the next hour. Now, if you would like to call in, please call in during the second hour. And John, I'll get you to read out those numbers at the beginning of the second hour. But please call in. We'd love to hear from you. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Stay tuned.
Would you like to make more definite progress in your walk with God? Bibles for America is offering a free study Bible and a set of free Christian books that can really help. The New Testament Recovery Version is one of the most comprehensive study Bibles available today. It's an accurate translation, and it contains thousands of footnotes that will help you to know God and to know the meaning of life. The free books are a three-volume set called Basic Elements of the Christian Life. Chapter by chapter, Basic Elements of the Christian Life clearly presents God's plan of salvation, growing in Christ, and how to build up the church. To order your free New Testament Recovery Version and Basic Elements of the Christian Life, call Bibles for America toll-free at 888-551-0102. That's 888-551-0102. 651-0102 or visit us online at bfa.org.
Looking for some truth? You found it. LogosRadioNetwork.com.